You probably have similar books in your own library. This is one I've had for a good while. It's a world book, but it's on the human body. Now, I can go through this. It has lots of lovely pictures about brains and all your internal organs, and I find it an interesting book to read. You know, if I was to ask you about your health, about how you are feeling, about what you eat and drink and what exercise you do to keep yourself feeling good, now, I'd probably receive as many different answers as people I would probably ask. Now, we're all different, aren't we? We're all different shapes, different sizes, different colours. Our bodies react in different ways to the same things. I know some people, well, I think most people love cream. I don't. I'm a bit strange that way. Chocolate, I think most people love chocolate. But we like different things, don't we? We're all different. And what we do to look after our bodies can be different. I know exercising. I'm probably not so much of a morning person. I'm more of an afternoon person. Like, for me to get up and to go to the gym in the morning, no, I'm still a little bit sluggish. But after work, yes, I'll go to the gym and have a good workout to keep me in some sort of shape. Now, what are we doing individually to look after ourselves? I know it's a really important question that we need to be looking after ourselves. I want to just tell you a little story. Rhonda and Naomi and I, we were teaching some Sudanese English there a bit over 12 months ago now. And we covered off, there'd probably be sometimes a dozen Sudanese, mostly women, a couple of men folk. But the day came that I wanted to talk about health. Now, brought a little snack along, and on this particular day, I thought, okay, I brought two pieces of bread along, and I said, okay, which do you consider, to the Sudanese people, I said, which would you consider is better for you? What do you reckon they said? Because they said, that's clean. Yeah, they saw that as being a dirty bread, and they saw that as being nice and white and clean. Now, it was interesting, I looked at the packet that I took that out of. That weighed 450 grams, the packet. Sorry, the loaf, I should say. That weighed 900 grams. So that loaf of bread is twice... I know, you feel this and there's not... But I think... I know, I bought a whole loaf of bread for that one slice. But, you know, no more wonderful piece of mechanism or system has ever been, well, devised than that which feeds and nourishes our body. You just think about it. This body that we do have, how marvellous it is. You know, we have a tongue for tasting. We have our teeth for chewing. We have our stomach for digesting all of these different foods we put into it. And we have our intestines for absorbing all of the goodness out of all of the food that we take in. You just think of a day and all the different types of food you take in, and your intestines are able to absorb the goodness out of that. We have our blood that circulates all the nutrients around to even the uttermost cell on your hands or feet. There's a blood flow to it so that it can receive its nutrient to survive. We have our lungs for maintaining our oxygen levels. And in addition to these parts that I've been talking about, now we have a lot of small glands through our body that produces a variety of different chemicals. And each one of those is really essential just to keep chemical balance right and to help digest the variety of foods that we eat, and to transform them into an endless variety of human parts. Like, you think about your heart part and your lung part and your brain part. Now, it's interesting, the body, isn't it? What a marvellous creation we are. Surely we would all agree that we've been created by a master designer. Now, each one of us possess one of these finely devised design systems. And it's fitting that we should take the best possible care of it, as it is the only one we have. And it has to last a lifetime, doesn't it? However long that lifetime may be. Now, while provision has been made for this system to repair itself if it becomes damaged, now it makes so much more sense to look after what we have and to keep it in good running condition. It's also a lot cheaper that way. You know, we all know the cost of going to visit a physician or a dentist or can be very costly, can't it? So it pays to look after ourselves, as you can save yourself some lots of dollars. Now, looking after it can be done by giving some thought to what we eat, how we eat, and in some cases, when we eat. Now, just eating anything on the menu or anything on the supermarket shelves for regardless of its food value or its possible effect on our bodies, just plain foolish. I know you can walk into a supermarket, and I would like to think that we make some intelligent choices about what we take off those shelves. Now, not that we should worry ourselves unduly about diet and become hypochondriacs. Now, that wouldn't do us any good, but equally we shouldn't become fanatical on the subject. I know there's nothing, people don't like fanatics, do they? Extremism. No, we need to be balanced, and that's the way the Lord wants us to be, balanced about how we eat. Now, as Seventh-day Adventists and a people of the Bible, you know, we should know a lot about how to look after our bodies, shouldn't we? And as Adventists, we should know that there's a real link between our spiritual, our mental, and our physical being, because one affects the other. We know that. What we eat, what we take into our bodies affects our moods. Now, like John, when he was writing, it's in 3 John verse 2, he's writing to his friend Gaius. And I like the way he starts off here. He says, "Dear friend, I pray that you may be in good health and that all may go well with your soul." Now, what a great way to say to start a letter to a friend, that I pray that you are in good health and that all is well with your soul. Because that's how we should be thinking about our friends. We should be praying for them and trying to help them. Now, when Jesus was on earth, you know, he did his best to help those in need of healing and medical assistance. Why? Because Jesus wanted people, God wants people to enjoy their lives. Come with me over to Matthew chapter 4. And it's here we find Jesus interacting with people, as through most of his ministry he interacted with people, whether it was his disciples or whether it was the wider population. But here we read in Matthew chapter 4, and I'll read verse 23, and it says, "Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in the synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering severe pain and demon-possessed, those having seizures, and the paralyzed, and he healed them. Large crowds from Galilee, Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan followed him." Now, Jesus is healing and caring for the people, led to many of them coming aside, thousands of them coming aside and sitting on the side of that hill that day to listen to the words that he had to say. He healed people of their problems, many of which were probably self-inflicted. I know, can we look back over our lives and say, oh, yeah, this could be self-inflicted. I did something or had some drugs or something way back or smoked some cigarettes and it's now impacting our life now. But it's after Jesus spoke to these people and healed them of many of their problems that they were more receptive to his word, to listening to him. When we look at Jesus' life, he was a carpenter, and any carpenters here? I imagine being a carpenter back in Jesus' day would have been a fairly tough job, trying to shape a piece of wood with the primitive tools they had back then compared to today, where you get out the electric planer, the electric saw, the electric this and the electric that, and to shape the wood. So Jesus' life in being trained as a carpenter, he would have been relatively fit from that. But in his ministry, when he started his ministry, he walked everywhere. How often do we get out and walk? I know my mother, she was a terror back years ago, like, unless she could get a park outside the shop she was going to, she probably wouldn't go there. She had to. And unfortunately, she's probably reaping, well, I won't say reaping the results, but that inactivity has certainly caused her now where she's lost a lot of mobility, because it's the old adage that if you, well, don't use it, you lose it. So exercise, getting out and walking. And Jesus walked. He would, of an evening, he would be on the top of a hill talking to his Father. Or it could be early morning, so whatever hour of the day, he would be out there talking with his Father. Now, God wants us to have good health. After all, he created us to live forever. Do you think about that day when you will be able to live forever and visit far distant planets and places? I look forward to that day, because our minds, like learning capacity, I know there's a lot of brain matter up here, but sometimes things go in there, but when I try and recall it later on, it's a little bit difficult at times. In the book of Genesis, chapter 5, we read of people living before the flood who lived for over 900 years. Even after the flood, they were living for 400. No, there's a little scrappy piece of paper which I've had in here. I don't know how long I've had this in here, but I think it was some analysis I was doing, but you could look at Shem, he was 600. Arphaxad was 438. So these are following the generation down. Eber was 464. Peleg was 239. Nahor come down to 205. Abraham, 175. We see a gradual decrease in man's longevity, don't we? After the flood. Today in 2009, how long do we live for now? Oh, sorry, I'm a little behind. 2011. The years go quick, too quick. I know, and this one is already going quick. I can't believe that we're already nearly to the end of February. Just a little bit. But in 2011, how long do we live for now? 70 we made. Usually the lady folk do a little bit better than us guys. Now, if God created us to live forever, then he should know what's best to keep our bodies in good running order. And it's in the Bible that we do find instruction as to, well, what we should eat. Now, it makes it clear that man's original diet consisted of fruits, nuts and grains. That was the diet that was given to Adam and Eve back there in the garden. And if God created us to live forever. I know it's important that we take into account some of the benefits of adopting a diet which will help us live, have a better quality of life. Come over to, right over to Genesis, back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 1. Now, every now and then you can read a verse, and I thought, I've obviously read part of this text many times before, but there was something that just jumped out at me. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 29, I'll read from. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And he goes on in verse 30 and says, and to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. You know, that little bit about the animals eating every green, I've probably read that text many times, but it actually says here that all the creatures eating the green plants of the earth. Now, this was God's plan before the entrance of sin. With eating the fruits, nuts and grains, you can imagine back there in Eden what that would have been like. And that supplemented by the fruit from the tree of life. Well, that was able to sustain God's creation forever and a day. Unfortunately, fortunately that we were shut out of the Garden of Eden and no longer had access to that tree of life after sin entered in, because can you imagine sinful people living for eternity? What that would do to God's universe? We seem to do a lot in the 70 years that we have now, don't we? We can reap so much destruction. Look at when they were living for 900 years, the state of the earth at that time. You know, we would never have known disease, sickness or death. Now we know all of nature has been affected by sin and has suffered. You know, man rebelling against God in one area, you know, he found it probably easy to disregard his counsels in other, and tiring of the fruits, nuts and grains, well, they started to kill animals and to eat meat. And there seems little doubt that this probably contributed to the state of affairs that existed prior to the flood and why the flood had to come. And in Luke 17, Jesus said in talking to his disciples, as in the days of Noah, people were eating and drinking and doing all sorts of evil, then the flood came and destroyed them all. You know, today there is nothing that man will not probably eat or drink or smoke, is there? You think of all the delicacies that man considers edible today. I can think of snails, calamari, oysters, cats, dogs, you name it. You can go into a restaurant and you can probably order it. Drugs, alcohol. Now, what is man? Where are we today? Are we far from probably what it was like before the flood? Probably not. In reading the Old Testament, we read about after the flood that God allowed man to bring meat into his diet. But there was very much a distinction between clean and unclean meat. Like into the ark, we know, went 7 pair of every type of clean animal, and of every unclean, there are only 2 pair that went into the ark. Why? Because after the flood, God knew that there wasn't going to be much plant life left on the earth, so God allowed mankind to begin to eat, meat at that time. But it's clear, let me make it sure that you understand that there's a very difference between clean and unclean. You can go back into Leviticus 11 there, and you can read about what is considered clean and unclean. And for very good reasons, the unclean ones were not intended for human consumption because basically they were the scavenger type animals. Although in the clean list, like if you look at the clean list, it lists animals, fish, birds and insects. I don't know how I would go eating locusts, but obviously it was a delicacy. Don't know how I'd, maybe if I was hungry enough I might eat a locust. How do you react to someone eating oysters or calamari or, I know if you happen to go out and somebody orders stuff like that. I know I cringe a little. I can't imagine. Now when you look at the list of unclean animals, there's one of particular notice, and that's the swine or the pig. You know, except for this animal, its sales generate so much wealth. Isn't it like at Christmas time, you see all the hams, you have to have ham on the Christmas table. You know, because of this animal, you know, and the people who prepare it and whose business depends on it, you know, they find all sorts of reasons for discounting all of the unclean foods and say, look, eating our pork, our pig, is not hurting us, so why not eat oysters or octopus? And let me read a little section from Ellen White. It's in Ministry of Healing, page 206. Those who eat flesh are but eating grains and vegetable at second hand. For the animal receives from these things the nutrition that produces growth. The life that was in the grains and vegetables passes into the eater. We receive it by eating the flesh of animals. How much better to get it direct by eating the food that God provided for our use? And I've got other texts here talking about meat, and I know, unfortunately, in this day and age we live, we all see how our chickens are raised in these huge sheds, battery hens, and how they are grown from an egg to a fully grown chicken for sale in about 10 weeks. All the steroids and all the chemicals that is now getting into our livestock that is on the market. Now, Ellen White wrote this a long time ago, and we know it's far worse today. Almost scary when you think of how stock is raised. She goes on and talks about the quality of the fish we eat. And I think we've probably all seen enough current affairs shows to realise where some of our fish are coming from. And we realise that, well, all of the sewage of the large cities eventually finds itself out in the oceans at some place. Now, one thing that I can say is there won't be any meat eating in heaven. There won't be any killing. Here on earth we've become so desensitised to killing that it means nothing. I know how glorious it will be to be in the kingdom of a place where there's no death, no suffering. Let's change track a little. Now I can equally apply the same scrutiny to junk food. The processed food that we find on our supermarket shelves. The sweets, the drinks. Now these could be far more harmful to us than eating meat products, eating fish. Now, what I've said this morning is nothing new. And as Adventists, we know this. We know the health message, but it's a sad fact that a lot of us have turned our back on the health message. A message that was given to us way back in Eden, repeated by the prophets, Jesus, and even into, like Ellen White in today's age. Now, over the decades, we've been known as a people who enjoy good health, who live longer than the general populace. Why? Because we love God and we long to do His will, don't we? This means that we respect God's creation. We are vegetarians, we promote a good natural food diet and have a balanced life. With the right amount of exercise, fresh air and lots of water. Never forget the water. We don't smoke or drink alcohol. It's these benefits that of this good life that we should be sharing with our neighbours, our friends, our work colleagues, in helping them to have a better quality of life and to help prepare them for what's ahead. Of a short video I want to show you. It probably goes for 3 minutes. And it was undertaken by National Geographic. Some of you may have seen it, but the research was done by David McLean, who undertook this research. So I'll just run this small 3 minutes for you.
By far the most surprising fact that I took away from this story is that Seventh-day Adventists outlive their American counterparts by about 10 years. What are they doing? Quite simply, the Seventh-day Adventists, who largely populate Loma Linda, California, have a religion that reinforces positive, healthy behaviors. For example, if you're a devout Seventh-day Adventist, you are a vegetarian, non-smoker, non-drinker, who takes a Sabbath every Saturday, where for one whole day you have to just unplug. So we met many incredible people there. The most incredible by far was a woman named Marge Jatan, who had just turned 100 and renewed her driver's license. So we went for a cruise, but before we did that, we had to go through a morning routine where she lifts weights and rides a stationary bike. And interestingly, the Seventh-day Adventists are the only culture of longevity that we visited who are not losing their longevity edge. And I photographed a baptism at this church. And I remember thinking, wow, this is the perfect example of how this religion is still growing and carrying forward.
This paints a pretty good picture of Adventists, isn't it? Now, on that same little video, I could have shown you some of the other cultures that he looked at. There were 3 or 4 other cultures where he had looked at that had lived longer lives. But it's interesting that he picked out Seventh-day Adventists as having a longer life. Now, where do you think we stand in regard to the health message today? Are we out there showing people how to live a better life? Showing them that there is a God who cares for them and wants them in His kingdom? Now, after all, this is our mission, isn't it? But it's also something we need to do with care. Not showing others that we are better than them, but rather that they may have a better quality of life, a better outlook on life. Do they see that in our lives? I'll come back to that. Do people see in our lives something that they want to have? That we have a better quality of life? As that little documentary said we should have. Unfortunately, we see a lot of Adventists turning their back on the health message today, don't we? We're not upholding the principles that we once knew. I'm not saying that we can eat our way into heaven by being vegetarian or abstaining from junk food. But eating unwisely could result and can result in a person being lost to the kingdom. You know, I've seen many people with damaged mental capacity because of taking drugs or alcohol. Naomi and I used to go down to Melbourne and work on a street band down there. And on a Friday night, you would have these people come along who had been impacted severely by drugs and alcohol, that they could no longer be an active part of society. Now, what we put into our bodies impacts our judgment and can cause us to make decisions contrary to where Jesus would want us to be. Now, even eating the manna that God provided the Israelites, it was manna from heaven. Did it save the Israelites? No, it didn't. That we need a relationship with our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ. Eating the manna won't automatically entitle us to a place in heaven. So in all our use of junk food, or drink, you know, our first question should be is this going to help my body? Will it nourish my body so that my body will be more efficient for God's service? Will it make my mind keener My muscles stronger, my judgments more sound, my influence for good more potent. Now, Alan White wrote a number of books on health, and we probably have them all in our libraries at home. And in 1863, she began to speak out against meat. And she was a meat eater to start with. At the turn of the century, 40 years after, between 1902 and 1905, she said the following: "I am instructed to say to you that if ever meat eating was safe, it is not safe now." But at the same time, she said, "Far too much sugar is used in food preparation." Now, what would she say about the food that we have today and well, you could mention sugar. What about salt? The high salt intake that we have in our food. We can now have a look at that. Now, almost 100 years after, it was only in 1977 that the scientific community finally admitted that they were wrong to recommend meat and animal products as a primary source of good nutrition. Back in 1977, not all that long ago when you consider how many millennium man has been on the earth. And it was in 1992 that they issued, based on scientific evidence, a new food guide, the Food Guide Pyramid, that looks amazingly similar to the eating plan recommended in the Bible. The foods that they suggest we should eat most frequently are low in fat and provide fibre, complex carbohydrates, vitamins and minerals. And these foods come from grains, plants, bread, cereals, rice, pasta, fruit and vegetables. Now, what I've got on the screen before you, now you can go into the Nutrition Australia website. That's what they have on their website. Now, if you look at that, what are we to eat most of? If you can read it. Like here we've got vegetables, dried peas, beans, lentils, cereals, breads, fruits and nuts. Eat moderately. Lean meat, fish, eggs, chicken, milk, yogurt, cheese. Eat in small amounts. Oil, margarine, butters, spreads. And the little thing, don't forget the things on the side. On the little salt shaker on the side, it's got a cross and we've got a big tick against a little tap. Lots of water. But also like all the legs underneath, because down the bottom there it says move more. We don't move enough in today's society. We don't get out and walk like we should. We need exercise. The body needs exercise to help digest the food that we eat. In the beginning, God told us what to eat. And although it's taken us thousands of years to realise that, hey, what he told us to eat is best for us. Now, man, we're finally coming around to accepting what he said was right. Now, my question to you this morning is this. Is your diet one that will uplift you for God's service?